Welcome to Conversations in Cannabis, an MRR podcast. Today's episode features Barry Sake, CEO of cannabis point-of-sale system GreenBits. This episode was recorded over the phone on January 13th, 2021.
Why don't you start out with giving us a little bit kind of about your background and what made you want to come into cannabis in the first place, or, you know, obviously a cannabis point-of-sale system company in the first place from such, you know, an illustrious career in the traditional markets?
Sure, thanks. I'm happy to be here. Ended up in the cannabis industry, not that I was targeting the industry, actually. You know, I spent my career working at Intuit and GoDaddy, focused on solving problems for small businesses and consumers in the tax and accounting space. I love working on products that cater to small businesses. I really love the fact that you're working on a business that that other businesses are relying on to run their business and you know, create the livelihood for their families. And it puts a lot of pressure on things, on doing things right, but it makes it really fun in terms of doing something that's really mission critical for our customers. So, you know, when I was looking for a new role, I was primarily interested in finding a place where or a company that was focused on small businesses and really solving those problems. I came across GreenBits and learned about the company, learned about, you know, the strength in the market and the strength in the products. And it really ticked all the boxes for me in terms of having products that really rely on developing great customer experience and that are sold to small businesses that that really rely on them. And then the fact that it was in the cannabis industry was just a plus on top of all that, actually, because you've got this new and growing and exciting emerging business where there's a lot of new things to go figure out, which always makes it a lot of fun as well.
Well, now, obviously, with Intuit, parent company of, you know, such illustrious tax companies like, TurboTax or financial service company like Mint, obviously massive company, you must have such insight into what's going on in the financial sector for cannabis. We've seen the Safe Banking Act get introduced. Is there a possibility of, you know, banking coming to the cannabis industry at any point in the near future?
I think so. I mean, I consider it a certainty. It's just when it'll happen. I mean, if you look at the state of the industry and the amount of, you know, money flowing through the industry now, both certainly in the legal part of the industry, and we've all been aware of the amount of money flowing through the black market side of the industry as well. All roads are heading toward, you know, it'll be legalized so that things can be safe and properly tracked and provide a better experience, you know, for everybody. I mean, better experience for government, better for the tax authorities, much better for retailers, and much better for consumers if we can digitize some of the payments and use traditional banking so we stop having the situation where there's a lot of under-the-table stuff happening with cash, which just provides an unsafe environment for everybody that's in the industry.
Well, it's not just the cash flow for banking for the retailers or any other business. It's also the ability to take on outside capital easily or have, you know, traditional banking invest in your business. Now, you guys led a successful Series B last year, which was led by, you know, Tiger Global Management and Casa Verde. Given that so many businesses are trying to reach scaling right now, with new markets emerging, for possibly people out there who are looking to take on investment, you know, which you guys successfully did, what is something that people should do as part of their due diligence, you know, something that maybe should not be overlooked?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think you started to touch on the idea that, you know, this does affect investment in the cannabis industry, which I absolutely agree with. You know, it'll, you know, legitimizing, if you will, the industry with the Safe Banking Act will allow a lot of money to flow into the industry that was not allowed to flow before. So that's exciting and good for the industry. As far as like looking at investments and evaluating different opportunities in the industry, I think it really doesn't look that different from investing in other, you know, new and emerging industries. So it gets down to fundamentals of how well the business is meeting customer needs, how important that need is to customers, and how much they're willing to pay for it and pay for solving that need, and how big the market is. And the great thing about cannabis is that the other part of this, part of the the safe banking legislation and the sort of political tide right now is that I expect to see much more market share opening up across the U.S. Over the next few years as well, which is a great thing as well.
Well, and you guys obviously are doing it right. You've expanded now to, I believe, 1,200 dispensaries, which is, you know, pretty incredible, you know, also considering the amount of data that you guys bring in, which is part of what the services are that you offer. When you're taking an overarching look at the data that you bring in, what are some of the most interesting things that have kind of popped out to you personally?
Well, we're seeing a lot of growth in same-store sales over 2020. So you do see a lot of COVID impact. I don't know that any of them are, you know, I think what's interesting is they reflect what you would expect to see mostly based on what you think about's happening during the COVID and pandemic. So we see increased consumption, sales that where, you know, shopping basket size is growing. So a lot of good trends that lead to you know, that point towards more consumption or evidence of more consumption in the industry. But we sort of know that that's happening, but it's nice to see the numbers are all playing that out. And then, you know, we have lots of data around, I mean, you know, everything people, our dispensaries sell. And so we do see some regional trends, but nothing that really jumps out. It's some of the regional trends are driven by the government and the rules in those regions as well. You know, there's some states where we see a lot of interest in flower and those types of products. They tend to be the states that allow unpacked flower to be sold. You know, so there's some interesting things you do see in some of the data around that, but I don't know that any of them are really super interesting insights overall. They are reflective of what's happening in the industry.
Well, out of curiosity, I mean, we've seen, you know, Vaporgate obviously happen in 2018. You know, we've seen, you know, COVID-19 happen in 2020 and obviously continuing now into 2021. I mean, when you're looking at that data or, you know, say you're looking at the categorical shifts in purchasing patterns for consumers, at least looking at maybe the start of the pandemic, I mean, have you seen maybe a shift from, say, flower to edibles or a shift from, say, maybe, you know, pre-rolls to traditional eighths or quarters? Like, are you seeing anything in terms of consumer shifts as an overall to the industry, or is it just regional patterns?
You know, overall with the industry, we're seeing a general just upward trend of consumption. I think there has been an edible growth as a category over time. I don't think that we didn't see anything in the pandemic that actually changed that, but there has been just a continuing trajectory of more edible products. You know, and I think if you look at the industry, right, there's been more products available, a lot more innovation, and that's in that part of the product realm. So that's all consistent, and we definitely see that in the data. But overall, it's mainly a trend of more consumption that we see.
Well, you know, you guys obviously having 1,200 dispensaries under your wing, you're used to onboarding a ton of new companies. You know, kind of walk me through what an onboarding process is for you with a new dispensary. And can you also kind of reach into maybe what are some of the things that maybe a company should expect when being onboarded into that platform?
Sure. Yeah. Onboarding is obviously a really important part of the sales and sales process and getting up and running. It's really what sets us apart and makes our customers successful using the platform. You mentioned, you know, a new dispensary. It's very different for dispensaries that are switching from an existing solution to us, by the way. So for a brand new dispensary, it's easier in some ways in that the dispensary is less concerned with porting over a bunch of data and account set up around their products. But they do have to create a lot of what they're going to do, you know, from scratch as they get going. And so we only work with legal dispensaries. So we start with validating the licenses, and then we also focus a lot on compliance. And so as part of the onboarding, we make sure that we have their proper licenses and we can get the account set up with the reporting agencies. And then we'll walk, then starts the training process where we'll find the right, you know, connect and find the right people at the dispensary. We have training for the different roles, you know, there's typically somebody that's doing more of the product and back office inventory management. There's then somebody that's managing the bud tenders, and we have a really robust training program that we leverage. That's an online training program called Green Bits University that we make available to our customers, and all of their employees can go through and certify that they've taken all the coursework. And so that is an important step. And then we consult with the inventory managers on making sure they get their inventory set up, and they're also have to receive manifests from the reporting agency. And then as they start getting ready to open, we'll work with them on making sure that the first few days go smoothly, and that they think through all the workflows they need to establish with their store and get going successfully.
When you're looking at, say, a new dispensary, obviously, you know, people that are coming into the industry for the first time, having to hire new staff and set up original SOPs for their business, being that you guys are kind of partnered in and showing through your university program how you should be doing things, what are some educational aspects for staff that you feel like new retailers should really make sure that they're employees are fully educated on, and what are some things that you feel like maybe bud tenders today, even at established businesses, maybe should take a re-educational course in, or you know, a higher learning in?
It's an interesting question. I mean, our coursework is pretty comprehensive, so we keep people up to speed. I think one of, you know, our main area of focus is making sure we do re-engage with bud tenders to stay current on the training. I think that's maybe our main challenge, is just saying, hey, you know, it's just because you took it a year and a half ago, it's probably worth looking through it again. And we work with our stores to make sure that they recertify bud tenders as much as they can, partly because the industry changes, and a lot of it also is because we make a lot of changes in our software to accommodate new features and functionality. For instance, we've been working a lot on delivery functionality, and that's currently an area of active focus for us. And so it's important that we work with our stores to make sure they're on the latest versions of our software, and then that they're trained up on how things like delivery can be integrated into their operations. So I think mainly it's staying current.
Okay, cool. And you know, clearly, you know, from state to state, from county to county, from city to city, laws are patchwork. You know, I'm based here in Los Angeles. Obviously, California has a vast patchwork of differing laws. How does Green Bits manage to stay on top of the ever-changing laws in the industry?
You know, we have staff dedicated to just that role. So we have people that are monitoring all of the changes and talking to the legislatures and just making sure we stay up on it. It's just something we have to invest in terms of spending time.
Well, we've seen, shifting gears a little bit, we've kind of seen a mentality shift across the entire globe as it comes to cannabis, I mean, not just here in the United States, but also overseas. How important is the international market to Green Bits' growth strategy?
So currently we do not have an international presence. We've focused only on the U.S. so far, and there's still new geographies, new states in the U.S. that we are looking to grow into. That being said, we do have some foreign countries in our growth plans as well. So the international market will start to play an increasing role in our growth, in the next couple of years. Next year, though, the U.S. is really still the main focus.
Well, let's take a look at the U.S. then, just as a primary focus. Obviously, I was you know, figuring long term, you guys would want to move overseas, since you know there's only 50 states here. But looking just at the U.S., what are some markets that you guys are? I'm again not talking about current markets that are already operating, but possible emerging markets such as the recreational market, maybe in Florida, or you know some other state. What is the main state that you're looking at as a future emerging market here in the U.S., and why would that be?
Part of the answer to that question starts with where we're operating today. So for us, the exciting markets are Illinois, Florida, Arizona, and then we'll see where in the Northeast things start to shake out. You know, New York, New Jersey, there's still some legislative work in some of those areas, but those, you know, those are the populous areas where the markets will be big and where we really want to be a strong player.
Well, given your background in finance, I'm kind of curious. I've heard rumblings of possible use of blockchain for track and trace technology. There have been, you know, certain people who have been looking at cryptocurrency as a possible banking alternative. How, you know, viable are these alternative technologies, and do you see them as, you know, emerging in the U.S. markets or in the international markets anytime soon?
Yeah, great questions. Yeah, you asked two different questions. So one is using a blockchain technology, sort of, you know, an immutable record, financial record, transaction record to track things. Versus doing payments or doing something in a financial sense with cryptocurrency. On the first one, you know, I think there's a big future actually for using blockchain to track and trace products all the way from the grower to the seller. You see that in other industries and other agricultural industries. So I think we should expect that at some point that will come to fruition in the cannabis space as well. I think, though, where the industry is, I'm not sure that the industry is ready to consume that or needs it right now, to be honest. So I think that's something that we'll see growth in the future. On the cryptocurrency side of things, you know, it's an interesting thought, and I was originally really excited about looking into that, you know, back when before I was in the cannabis industry, like, oh, I should use, you know, Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies. To solve that cash problem, you know, the lack of digital transactions. I think the thing that is a big hurdle, and I saw this when I was working at Mint and at Quicken, is that the real challenge with introducing something like that is you're introducing a new digital payment mechanism or a new wallet. And the consumer adoption of those things is really challenging. People really need a strong reason to do something different with their wallet rather than use a credit card or the cash they got in their wallet. And, you know, like you look at historically, like PayPal really leveraged their partnership with eBay to make it so, like, that was the only way you could really pay and feel safe about paying for something on eBay. And that was a great way to start and kind of jumpstart PayPal. I think, you know, you don't see a lot of retailers taking Bitcoin today, and it's just really not a thing that's happening. Because it's so hard, it's just really complicated. Like, how do I get a Bitcoin wallet, and how would I actually pay in Bitcoin, and do I feel comfortable and safe doing that? Because I've heard stories about people, you know, losing all their Bitcoins because they put the wrong number up on the web or whatever. So I think there's enough challenges there that make digital currencies really a niche thing in digital payments for cannabis. You know, I'm excited about safe banking. I think as soon as safe banking rolls along here, it's a big market, and guess who's going to be here? All of the big credit card companies and banks are going to come jumping in as soon as the Fed says, yep, it's okay. And that's the one where, you know, anybody will walk in any store and pull out the cards they got in their wallet and pay for stuff. And so that's what I think is going to be the big long-term play.
Right, and especially given that cryptocurrency is extremely volatile right now. I mean, obviously, we've seen the massive dip in Bitcoin recently, and then you have the SEC lawsuit against Ripple. So, you know, that's a completely sensible thing to do is not use that right now. You know, just out of curiosity, you know, been that you guys have been operating for as long as you have, I believe you guys launched in 2016, what does the next 5 years look like for GreenBits? You know, can you paint me kind of a canvas of what your strategies are going to be and where you hope to end up in the next 5 years?
Sure. I think there's two main thrusts to our strategy. One is geographies, which we already mentioned. So we have really exciting expansion and aggressive expansion goals into other geographies in the U.S. and around the world. And so that's an important part for us. We focus on retail markets, so we tend to be a strong player in geographies where there is a retail cannabis sector, or at least an expectation that's coming online. So we'll sometimes enter a med state if we think there's a high likelihood of recreational cannabis following along. And that'll apply to international locations as well. We also are a strong player in compliance, and so we're more excited about markets where there's a robust compliance legal framework in place as well. And then the other part is that we have traditionally been more of a smaller SMB type player in the market, and that's been great for us. So I mentioned it came from Intuit. So I think of us as like the QuickBooks in the business. So we have lots of smaller businesses. We meet their needs really well. But there is consolidation in the industry as the industry matures and as the stores grow. And so we're seeing a lot of demand from our own customers for more multi-store and multi-location, more sophisticated tools to manage a more complex operation that might involve, you know, one to many locations, you know, 10 or more locations. And so we expect that we'll continue to leverage that trend and cater to it and actually build software that really helps people with those, solving those management tasks.
If there is one piece of advice that you could give to cannabis retailers today, what would that piece of advice be?
Well, besides using Greenbits to run their store, which is the best point of sale software out there, I would say, you know, the thing I hear from the store owners after picking a great partner for running the point of sale and inventory system, because it's so fundamental to the store. The biggest next challenge I hear is hiring people. And it's something I heard in other industries as well, is, you know, really focusing on hiring and training great people. And you mentioned, you know, SOPs or standard operating procedures, like having some really thinking carefully about how you manage and train employees and how you keep them up to speed. How, you know, if you want to implement a new process for doing something, how do you do it? Do you have a way to train your employees? Do you have places where they can go to review and read the current way of doing things? Or are you really doing things more in an ad hoc way? And I would say focus more on hiring great employees and thinking more procedurally around how do you train and keep them up to speed and current would be the thing to focus on.
Awesome. Now, just to kind of cap it on a happy note, I got to ask, you know, do you consume cannabis at all yourself? And if you do, what's your favorite strain and method of consumption?
I do from time to time. I'm not sure I am deep enough into it to have a favorite strain at this point. But I tend to flavor flower products and some vapes.
Okay. I mean, on the flower product, do you go more pre-roll or do you roll your own? Or, you know, pipe, bowl? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, being a little newer, I'm more of a pre-roll customer, although when I'm with friends that, you know, have the skills, then the roll your own works great.
Excellent, excellent. Barry Sigg, CEO of Greenbits Cannabis Retail POS System. Again, really appreciate all your time today, sir.
All right, thanks for having me on.
We would like to thank Barry for his time and being on today's episode. Find out more about Greenbits by visiting them online at www.greenbits.com. Stay tuned to the next episode here on Conversations in Cannabis, an MRR podcast.